then, the town had settled down into a sleepy little farming community where nothing much ever happened. On this Tuesday morning, that was all about to change. Six men rode in about 8 o'clock. The eastbound train was due at 9. The men tied their horses at the hitch rack in front of the depot and walked across the street to the hash house run by the Chinaman Ling Wu. They had flapjacks, scrambled eggs and bacon, and coffee as they sat at a table and talked quietly among themselves. Nobody paid much attention to them. At first glance, they were ordinary-looking men. That was because their coats covered the butts of their six guns. Those guns gleamed with care, and the walnut grips were well worn from long use. The men took their time eating. Around 9:05, one of them took out a big, fancy pocket watch, flipped it open, and checked the time. He looked around the table at the other men, nodded, and snapped the watch closed. As he stood up, he slipped the timepiece back in his pocket. The other men got to their feet as well. The purposeful way in which they moved toward the door of the hash house was the first hint that something might be wrong. The strangers were brisk and businesslike now. As they stepped out of the building, the sound of a train whistle came clearly through the morning air. The eastbound was on schedule. Hell, it was even a couple of minutes early. The men crossed the dusty street to their horses and shucked Winchester repeaters from saddle boots. Then they walked around the red brick depot building to the platform instead of going through the lobby. A few townspeople stood on the platform, waiting to either board the train or meet somebody who was getting off. Some of them glanced curiously at the strangers. A couple of older men who had been to see the elephant a time or two in their lives looked with narrowed eyes at the strangers and then turned to walk quickly into the depot as if they were getting out of the way of something. The train was in sight now, chugging steadily toward the station from the west, black smoke rising from the diamond-shaped stack on the big Baldwin locomotive. The man who had checked his watch stepped to the edge of the platform, leaned out slightly to peer along the tracks, and then nodded in satisfaction. He turned to the other five and repeated the nod. Inside the station, one of the old-timers was talking quickly and earnestly to the station master. The station master frowned dubiously at first, but after a minute he nodded and gestured to one of the boys who worked at the depot. He gave some quick instructions to the boy, who then hurried across the lobby, banged through the doors, and took off at a run down the street in the direction of the marshal's office. He wasn't going to get there in time. The train was already pulling into the station. Frank Morgan's long legs were stretched out in front of him, and his hat was tipped down over his eyes. He never slept very well on a train, so earlier that morning, after he'd gotten some coffee and a bite to eat in the dining car, he'd returned to his seat for a nap. He didn't fall completely asleep, but he rested a little while remaining alert. That habitual caution was ingrained so deeply within him that it would always be a part of him, he supposed. When the train began to slow, Frank felt it and raised his head. He opened his eyes and saw the conductor coming along the aisle. The conductor called out the name of the town where the train was about to stop. It didn't mean much to Frank. The train was somewhere in Kansas. That was all he knew. Frank thumbed his hat back on thick, dark hair, streaked liberally with gray. He wore a faded blue work shirt with the sleeves rolled up a little on his muscular forearms. The legs of his denim trousers hung outside the tops of well-worn horseman's boots. His clothes might be nondescript, but his ruggedly handsome face possessed a power that sometimes made folks look twice at him. He didn't appear to be a wealthy man, but he was. One of the richest hombres west of the Mississippi, in fact, with business interests scattered from the Rio Grande to the Canadian border. Frank Morgan didn't pay much attention to those business interests, though. He had a whole passel of lawyers and accountants in Denver and San Francisco to do that. He watched them just closely enough to know that nobody was trying to cheat him. No, judging by appearances, Frank Morgan was little more than a saddle tramp, a drifter. But the Colt peacemaker on his hip told a different story. He wasn't just a drifter. He was the drifter, a fast gun whose fame